Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. You temper all the times, the times I
welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, Tommy, it's the holiday season. I'm not sure which one because I've already decorated for Christmas and it's just lights and tinsel and holly and
eggnog. I know what you mean. I got some of each up too. There's fall stuff, Thanksgiving stuff. We already started putting Christmas stuff up, the trees up. It's just everybody's rushing Christmas this year because they're so tired of quarantine. They want to get the damn year over.
You might be onto something there. I'm pretty steadfast that I do not like to decorate for Christmas before Thanksgiving, because that's always kind of been a special holiday for our family with getting together and playing football and, you know, all that all jazz. But
yeah, me too.
This year I was just like, you know what? I'm putting the lights up. We're doing Christmas. We're going to go ahead and get in the spirit. I need some twinkly lights and some distractions. I'm ready to go.
It's this damn quarantine.
It is. It is. And I am unapologetic about it. I don't feel bad. I see all these curmudgeons and these Scrooges out there like, we're losing Thanksgiving as a holiday. I'm like, I don't care. I need this. I need this right now.
Well, here's the way I feel is that we are too close to having a vaccine to screw it up now. So if you got to sacrifice one Thanksgiving of not getting together with a bunch of other people that you're going to infect or are going to infect you, do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just avoid the gathering, and next year you can have a bigger one. But
I don't think we're playing football this year. I don't think we can.
Well, I can anyway. I've only got one working arm and no working legs.
But even then, you were playing quarterback with your left arm and doing a pretty decent job at it.
Well, maybe so, but I'm pretty much a statue at this point. But you're right. We couldn't all go out there running around. None of us are in the same pods or anything like that.
No.
So we can't go out there.
How long has our family been playing the Turkey Bowl?
Well, I have been with the family for 42 years, and they've been playing it all the time that I've been there.
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing it as long as I can remember. So, mm-hmm. And it was played before you, I think, as well, with some of the older
folks. Oh, yeah. We didn't start it. I was told, this big football game goes on when Mary and I first got married. That's how I said, good, I like football.
Yeah, I had a friend when I was in law school in Florida, and we had a flag football team. Our law school played in the local bar association league, and I was getting ready to go home for Thanksgiving, and he's like, what do you guys do for Thanksgiving? He's like, we play football. He's like, a serious game. I was like, yeah, packing my cleats up and everything like that. He's like, you wear cleats in your family football game? I was like, I want to win.
You said you haven't seen the way my brother-in-law plays.
I always remember, it was funny too, because he played football in college too, and he was very impressed that our family had such a seriousness that we actually wore cleats to play family football for our Turkey Bowl. So I remember sometimes it was just you and me and Charles out there with only three of us in the snow and whatnot, but we kept the Turkey Bowl spirit alive.
Yeah, I would quarterback and you all would take turn running routes against each other.
And just knocking the hell out of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that I won't have to worry about COVID much longer, since Mary and I have donated our bodies to science and we signed up for the AstraZeneca vaccine trial and went and got our first shot last Friday.
I thought you were donating your body to science fiction. That was the understanding I had.
Well, I tried donating it to science and they rejected it.
So you guys went and you're doing some sort of vaccine trial, right?
Yeah, we got a shot, and then we have to come back in December 19th and get our follow-up shot.
Yeah.
And if we may have gotten a real shot, and we may have gotten a placebo. Now, I'm fairly certain Mary got the real shot because she was a little under the weather for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I felt fine. Nothing happened to me. So they probably just shot me full of sewer water.
Yeah, maybe it's piss and vinegar. You got a lot of that going on anyway.
Yeah, maybe so. It could have been beer. They could have injected me with Guinness. I would have liked that.
I'm pretty sure that might have killed you if they put that straight in your bloodstream. But
I do it.
if it gets rid of COVID, I'd do it.
Trump said we should put bleach in there. I figure it's got to be better than bleach.
Yeah, Guinness is definitely better than bleach. And, it's got a lot more minerals
for you. It's got protein.
Well, so we did an episode, was it last week we did an episode on King of Kongs?
Yes, I think that was our last episode, I believe. No.
It kind of runs together.
I know.
We were doing some cleaning out of one of our closets and stuff, and he said that it was a birth announcement for a pet somebody had gotten. They adopted a foster pet, and they did a birth announcement for it, kind of like a cute little thing. And Stephanie's like, oh, that was last year. And we looked at it, and it was in June. Like, well, it seemed like last year.
It seems like it, yeah. But I don't think King of Kong, I think, was 2 ago.
Yeah, it might have been 2 ago.
Yeah, we did something else last week. I'd have to think real hard on it to figure it out.
Well, we talked about that. And when you look at King of Kongs, that documentary in particular, it's not a new one that's been out. It's been out for quite some time. But mm-hmm. It was really the first docudrama, I think that might even be the first time that phrase is used, where you have a documentary that is really telling a story in a traditional sense with a kind of a protagonist, antagonist, and they've taken some license with the editing to try to create a certain theme or a story that kind of goes along with it. You know, the docudrama. It's a documentary, but it's also entertainment.
There's going to be a kill screen in 2 minutes. You want to see a kill screen? There's going to be a kill screen in 2 minutes.
Exactly. So Matthew Geithner suggested that we should look at something on the Facebook Court Appointed page about legal protections for documentary filmmakers. Kind of like, what were the legal protections for the documentary filmmakers of King of Kongs? And so we thought that might be kind of interesting to see how many documentaries have ever been sued, since now documentaries are not really kind of your ones we grew up with in the past. They're more of kind of an entertainment type thing. So they take a bit of creative license and they have a story to tell.
Well, I think he was interested too in whether they were, suppose that they are documenting something and people are, you know, like running guns and things like that. And you see behind the curtain of the things going on, and how are if these guys are committing crimes, how are the people doing the documentary not supposed to report them or not involved in it?
Yeah, I mean, if someone is running lawyers, guns, and money, and this stuff has really hit the fan, and they're reporting it, then you have to turn that over.
Yeah. So that's a good question. I never really thought about that.
I had neither. So whenever a lawyer has a novel legal question, they typically do what people generally do. They Google it.
There you go. That's Google. That's the way to get it. That's what I always do. I Google everything.
I do Google everything. I might have a bit more of a discriminating eye, I think, with regard to the legal arguments, but I do Google things to kind of get a baseline and understand where things might be. So the very first thing that came up when I Googled documentaries that were sued was a whole list of Netflix documentaries, which
yeah,
didn't surprise me because Netflix has a ton of documentaries out there. They seem to greenlight a lot of different things or pick up the rights to a lot of different things.
Huh. I hadn't heard about any of that.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of them. So the first one that came up on the Google search was this documentary called Afflicted, which dealt with people with chronic illnesses. And there's a 50-page complaint out there, which is available online, and I read through it pretty extensively. I didn't read it verbatim, like line for line, like I was actually going to answer the complaint, but I skimmed through it. And it was filed in California back in late 2019, where the plaintiffs were some people that were depicted in the documentary, and they claim that they were, quote, duped by plaintiffs into participating in a salacious reality television program that questioned the existence of their chronic illnesses and portrayed plaintiffs as lazy, crazy, hypochondriacs, and or malingerers who were deserving of scorn and who in fact have received scorn and abuse because of defendants' cruel and duplicitous actions. So they, that's what they're alleged to have done.
And I would hate to be accused of malingering.
I know.
Of all the things I've ever been in my life, I've never been a malingerer.
And when you read through this complaint, the interesting thing is that through 41 pages, you just kind of read different broad statements. They're not actually the causes of action. These are just like general statements like about what took place and what kind of setting up the causes of action. And when I say cause of action, that's the actual thing that you can sue somebody for. That's what you, whenever we talk about negligence and I talk about the elements of that, each cause of action has its individual elements of it. So before they lay out what elements were broken by each of these causes of action, there's 41 pages of them just kind of throwing everything at Netflix for what they did. So it's kind of interesting. It's a very strange narrative that you read through it, but it's a very descriptive. And so by page 41, you get there, they allege different causes of action, and they sue them for defamation, false light, unjust enrichment, injunction, and fraud. So the defamation is essentially saying that they have defamed them or talked improperly about them, and it's false. The false light is a very similar cause of action, which kind of is the similar thing. Unjust enrichment is essentially that Netflix or these producers have received a benefit and it was conferred upon them, and they've retained that benefit, and it should have been given to these plaintiffs. The injunction is for them to remove the documentary from Netflix, and fraud is basically saying that they were deceptive in how they were presenting what they were doing to the plaintiffs. Now, as we talked with about the last episode, and actually, now that I remember, the last episode was about the election, not King of Kong. So King of Kong was two episodes ago.
Right, voting fraud.
Voting fraud. But as we talked about the last episode, whenever you plead fraud, you actually have to talk about that in detail and assert with specificity how it was that you were defrauded.
Right.
So in each one of those, the defamation, false light, unjust enrichment, and injunction, those are all very short little sections. And then the fraud section, again, at the very end, is quite lengthy because they actually go into detail. They plead it properly. They go into detail about how they were defrauded. And I thought it was kind of interesting to segue back into our last episode. I don't want to get off topic too much, but if you noticed all the different lawsuits where the Republican Party and Trump were suing the different states and whatnot, alleging different fraud, they were actually dismissed a lot of times because they weren't pled with specificity, and they went back to that standard, the Twombly and the Iqbal, the different ones that I had mentioned, and I felt kind of like, hey, wait a second, I might know what I'm talking about, because they actually mentioned that in the different news articles I read about how they failed to properly plead it. So,
well, that's like, it reminds me of being a kid on a playground is the way they did it. It's like, well, what is your proof of fraud? Ask anybody. That's what you used to do on a fight. What's your problem? Who said that? Ask anybody. They all said it.
Yeah. Now, the thing is that with this complaint, to go back in, to jump back to where we're talking about this episode, when they plead fraud, they're actually using specific instances. They're talking about how the signature lines, when they were very first solicited from the producers of this show, they went into detail about what they were doing, and it never mentioned that it was talking about kind of these kind of crazy hypochondriac type situations. It was talking about, you have a disease that's really rare. We want to shed light on this disease that you have. So that's kind of how they were trying to present it, to get the word out about this rare disease you have, when in turn it kind of presented them like some sort of quack or crazy person. So
in other words, these people were being this way, but what they were like malingering or whatever, but they presented to them that we want to show how bad this is for you to help you out, but what they were really doing was slanting it towards making them look bad.
Yeah, and now maybe they are malingering, maybe they're not. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of things out there. I can't jump into your skin and tell you how you feel. You can't jump into my skin and tell me how I feel.
I thought you were saying that they were kind of like coached them and said, now do this or act like that. No. so that they were depicting themselves in a way that wasn't really them for the sake of the documentary.
No, they were depicting themselves as themselves, but the way it was presented to them as to how the documentary was going to be presented was more along the lines of, this is a documentary. This is about like these rare diseases that people have. We want to shed mm-hmm. light to them. And yeah. in reality, what they did was, it was almost more like a reality show where they put it out where these people have these crazy diseases that aren't supported by any medical finding. They're psychosomatic. They're just not, they're full of it.
Kind of like on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, when they edit it so that somebody's a bad guy.
Right. That's the whole thing. And that's where King of Kongs was one of the very first ones of these docudramas where it's a blur between reality TV and a documentary. Think about King of, what was the one that just came out? Tiger King. Think about Tiger King when that came out. Like mm-hmm. you have a very clear-cut person who is supposed to be the protagonist. You have somebody who's supposed to be the antagonist. It's the classic good versus evil type story. And, you know, but of course...
You have Carol Baskin, who fed her husband to a tiger,
yeah.
to the lions.
And Tiger King, you end up not liking anybody, but... It's
yeah. That was a good documentary to start 2020. That was the first one everybody watched when we first went into quarantine, and that was indicative of 2020.
It was. Some people got fed to tigers. Some people ended up in prison. Nobody really liked it. I was just like,
Here's my question, though. Most of these documentaries, they're done by somebody that has an idea, and they go out and they shoot this film, and then they try to sell it to somebody for distribution. So if Netflix saw it and the people presented it as being real, and as far as they know it is, and they showed it, Netflix shouldn't really have a hand in that. It ought to be the people that made the documentary that are responsible if they skewed it or something.
Well, now maybe Netflix is not the ones who were fraudulent when they were soliciting the documentary to these people. So maybe they weren't the ones on the email with the signature line saying they're trying to do this about an actual medical condition people have. But they are the ones who are putting it out there and getting it out into the world and disseminating this false information. So at a certain point, there is some culpability on Netflix for putting this out there, because but for Netflix, you would not have this mass distribution of what some producer put together. So
well, but does it make it any better if the guy just showed it to like one city? And he went around and showing this movie to one city. I mean, it's either defamation or it's not. It's either true or it's not. Well, it shouldn't matter how wide it's spread.
No, it does matter how wide it's spread, because we have to talk about what the damages are. Because we don't have a way to make people whole in this country other than rewarding them with damages. Like, that's what it is. Like, the damages to you are X amount. How far widespread was this disseminated? So, based upon that... we can figure out, or at least try to figure out economically, how you were harmed from this. And that's how we make people whole, because we don't have a magic wand that we can wave to make things right for people. The only way we can do it is to give them money. I mean, that's...
We have a green wand.
We have a green wand, yes. So I think that the important thing, too, is that, you know, before you enter into something like this, you have to have a lawyer read over any kind of agreement you're getting into. If you're going to do a documentary about your life and you're going to allow people into it, then you need to have a lawyer look at it and figure out, what am I signing away? What am I giving to somebody? Are they going to be able to portray me however they want? Do I have any say in how I'm portrayed? And what if I don't like it? I mean, it's, you know, and these people received no payment for this either, because it was a documentary. A mm-hmm. lot of times in reality TV, people are paid for reality TV too.
So right.
That was another kind of thing. Like, this is a blurred line between a documentary and reality TV. So if you're going to have your life put under a microscope like this, then you probably should be paid for it.
Are these still pending, or have they been settled?
No, they are still pending. I have kind of an interesting segue into what Netflix and the other defendants' response was, which was filed back in March. But before we get into that, I believe that we have a possible motion pending before the court today. And by
why?
Court appointed.
Well, yes, if it pleases your reality TV ship, we'd like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
I don't even know how to respond to that. I was trying to think of something clever to say, but I got nothing.
Well, it took me a while to come up with that.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty busy with my GTL, my gym, my tanning, and my laundry. So let me see if I can get to it. That's the closest thing I have to reality TV. The whole Jersey Shore experience, which was probably dating him quite a bit.
We got a situation.
We got a situation. So who do we have on the situation today, Tommy?
We have our good friends at BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com.
So is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
COVID-19 and quarantine.
Hopefully not COVID-20.
That's right. So
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist and that you can start communicating with in under 48 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas.
The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
The thing is that you'll get a timely and thoughtful response. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in uncomfortable waiting rooms with traditional therapy, wearing a mask, reading old magazines.
Old ones, COVID-infected ones. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily at www.betterhelp.com/reviews/.
I don't think the last slash is important.
Oh.
It could be. I don't know.
Add the slash or don't add. If it doesn't work, then put it on there or take it off. Whichever, the opposite of whatever you did.
But there is a slash that's very important. Visit betterhelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
And, as always, we have a special offer for court-appointed listeners. You'll get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/court.
That's right, 10% off your first month at BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com/court. Mike and Tommy want you to have BetterHelp today.
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 I don't know why I did the echo effect there. It felt right. I went with it.
All right. That's right. You got to go with your gut. Go with your feeling.
So this lawsuit that we were talking about before the motion hour there was a suit against Netflix, and Netflix and the other defendants have responded and said that the plaintiffs in this afflicted had signed away their rights, and there's a motion to dismiss based upon anti-slap grounds, and we've talked about that numerous times actually on this podcast.
That's exactly right.
And the SLAP is an acronym, Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. So, as I said, it seems like SLAP is showing up quite a lot these days whenever we go into these various popular types of lawsuits we come across. And they always seem to go hand in hand with defamation and people spouting off about themselves and how people were portraying them and whatnot. And I think it's probably a testament to where our society is at this point with the general litigiousness and the amount of the general inability to accept someone else's point of view about your view or opinion. I think that's kind of where we are.
Well, that's like something that I've noticed a lot more on Judge Judy when I'm watching it.
Oh, do tell us about your finger on the pulse of Judge Judy and the general court docket that's going on these days.
Well, a lot of times these people, the plaintiff's case is that somebody that provides a service did not do a good job providing this service. So right. the service provider is a defendant.
And well,
then the defendant files a countersuit for defamation. And when Judge Judy says, well, what is your defamation? Well, they went online and left a bad review of my business. And so that's why I'm countersuing them for defamation, because I run a good business and they said I run a bad business. And Judge Judy has to explain to them that is their opinion. They're entitled to their opinion. they placed it there. And unless they stated outright falsehoods about your business, if it was just their opinion that your service sucked, then that's just too bad. You don't have a case.
And again, that's where you're getting into this whole talking about things explicitly and actually stating it in the complaint or what it is you're trying to say. Well, if you just say that their business sucked, I mean, that's your opinion. And if it's saying, like, well, they didn't do what they were supposed to and this, that, and the other, and you go into it, then you're actually getting into the facts of the situation. And it gets past that whole kind of fraud, prima facie type case that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. But, you know, the more I see these slap defenses, it does kind of concern me a little bit. And the reason being is that a slap lawsuit could bar access to the courts. So if you're scared of suing someone because you might get hit with this slap counterclaim where you might actually have to pay attorney's fees and things like that, what that's going to do is that it's going to make it so people won't have access to the courts, which is one of the rights that has been acknowledged since the Magna Carta. To quote it, it says, "To no one will we sell, to no one will we refuse or delay right of, or justice." So if you feel like you are going to file a lawsuit and you're going to get hit with this anti-slap type counterclaim, that has a chilling effect on the ability for you to bring your lawsuit, because you financially are going to be under the possibility of losing it and hurt yourself. Our nation's founding fathers knew that they would never consent to be governed and surrender the right to decide disputes by force. And they wanted the government to have a forum for resolving these disputes. But the problem is that as we've grown a society, that people file these lawsuits more frequently. So it's mm-hmm. kind of a balancing act. It's a hard issue to try to figure out how we're going to deal with it going forward.
Our founding fathers never foresaw Facebook.
Indeed, they did not. And they did not understand the ramifications of Tiger King or Afflicted. I don't think George Washington was thinking about, well, maybe there one day there'll be this documentary on this magic screen on the wall where some guy has an employee eaten by a tiger and he feels the need to go through on a leather fur-lined EMS coat before he goes deals with the fact they got their arm gnawed off.
Yeah, and they never had to deal with a bad Yelp review.
No, that's for certain. So it's one of the kind of interesting things. Now, one documentary that I saw where you could actually find these various this lawsuit where somebody had suffered actual monetary damages was a documentary on Netflix called When They See Us. Have you ever seen that one?
Yes, I have.
So that story tells the story of five teenagers who were wrongly convicted of rape in 1989, and they were known as the Central Park Five.
Yes, I saw. It's a very moving movie.
Yeah. Movie. You said movie. It's supposed to be a documentary. And Fairstein was the head of the Manhattan DA sex crime division at that time. So now I've never watched it. Why don't you tell me what your basis of that is?
Actually, here's the reason I say movie. It is a documentary and it is also a movie.
Okay.
I've seen both versions of it, and it was...
Oh, that's right. You remember you talking about that.
Yeah. And there was a... lady jogger, I believe she was. I'm having a draw on my memory, which is never a good sign. Lady jogger that was attacked. She was raped and brutally beaten in Central Park.
Right.
Well, there happened to be, for whatever reason, a group of African-American kids that had gone to the park somewhere in the general vicinity of where she was and somewhere around the general time, but none of it exactly matched. But they decided... That they dragged a few of them in and started asking them, said, "We know one of you did this. We know one of you did this. What? Why were you all there and what were you doing?" And they called it, and I think one of the kids was just telling them what they wanted to hear. They called it a wilding. Mm-hmm. And the cops took that and ran, and the newspaper, they loved hearing that kind of thing. They took that and ran. So there was a lot of pressure. The cops had to find out. This was an affluent white lady that this happened to. And these were all African-American teenagers from lesser circumstances. So they demanded somebody pay for this. So they went after like five 14 and 15-year-olds. I think the oldest one maybe was 16. And dragged them in and like kept them in without representation and without their parents, and kept them in questioning them for like 24 hours, and basically beats, or I won't, not physically beat, but mentally beat confessions out of all of them. And they had to tell them what to say because none of them knew what it, what they were supposed to be doing. They tricked several of them. And so they were all went to jail for this, and they spent quite a bit of time in jail before they were finally all acquitted.
Yeah.
And they, their DNA, I believe, proved who the guy was that had actually attacked her. And it was some of the guy not related to that. And even though the evidence showed they weren't even anywhere in the area where it happened.
Now, who do you think is the villain in that, that documentary you saw?
The prosecuting attorney.
Exactly. And the prosecuting attorney is the one that filed this lawsuit against Netflix. And she has moved on from the DA's office, and she's actually a mystery writer now. She has her own series of books, and she was awarded a some sort of award from the Mystery Writers Association of America, the MWA, which I guess is a big honor.
Well, it was probably fiction, and she was good at creating fiction because she created the fiction of these poor five kids being guilty of this.
Well, she said that after this documentary came out in 2018, that they withdrew their award from her. Her reputation nosedived as a result of the documentary. She was dropped by her publisher, and she was pressured to resign from several different boards that she sat on. And she claims that she was defamed in the three episodes she appeared in, and said that, most glaringly, the film falsely portrays her as in charge of the investigation and prosecution of the case, including the development of the prosecution's theory of the case, when in truth, as detailed in the lawsuit, she was responsible for neither the aspect of the case nor the way it was presented. So she's trying to say that she didn't have much to do with it. She was kind of given the investigation and said, here, prosecute this case. And that's what she did. And but nonetheless, she made a willing villain in the case, and they presented her in that light, and that's the way it went. They took their artistic license and promoted it as a true story and made her as the racist, unethical villain who was out to jail innocent children of color at any cost.
Well, I think she was. I mean,
you think that's true?
Reading between the lines and what happened, yeah, I think so. After watching the movie and the documentary, I think that she absolutely wanted a conviction and wanted somebody to pay for it. And to her, their lives had no value. She didn't care.
Oh, so you think that what she's saying is actually true?
Oh yeah. I think she's trying to cover her own butt is what she's trying to do now. She's trying to say the other, but I think that the way they depict her is exactly the way she was.
Right. Now, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the movie. I know nothing about this. I remember you talked about it, you know, probably several months ago. You said I should watch it.
Yeah, I would highly recommend both of them. There's several that I would highly recommend.
Yeah, and I didn't. But, I might have to watch it now and see what it comes to. But it does bring into light, though, kind of an interesting thing. Like, what is reality and what is perception? Does it matter how these people are out there editing these films to get the desired impact that they want? Because we know it's an age-old thing. You want to have a protagonist, antagonist, a good guy and a villain, a white hat and a black hat. Mm-hmm. That's how stories are.
Yeah.
So a documentary that has both those is much more compelling.
Sure.
Something that is just, well, both people kind of have a good point. Here's where they're coming from. They both have issues. What do you all think? Nobody wants to watch that. They want to see this person is good. This person's evil.
Well, here's the thing. The outcome to that was atrocious. What happened? It should not have happened to anybody. So,
for sure,
the only ones that can be responsible are those that were in charge, because they're the ones that made all the decisions and did what they did. So who was in charge that made this happen? It's either you just can say blindly just say, well, it's the system's fault, but there are people that make the system up, and those people need to be held accountable. And if just not being able to keep your job is all that it was, she deserved a lot worse than that.
Well, and that's a very good point. Because at a certain point, there have to be checks and balances to make sure that nothing like that happens. somebody has the ability to look at this and say, this doesn't seem right. We need to stop this.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably would have been her in this case. So, you know, even if the documentary presented her in a bad light because she did, even if she did not actually direct the investigation, was given kind of like a book of facts about here's what took place, and she decided she wanted to go ahead and prosecute it anyway, she should be held liable for not actually investigating the facts appropriately and not making a decision. Like, something here doesn't quite add up.
Well, and there were times where she had to show in the timeline or show on a map where people were at specific times, and she couldn't make those things match up, but she just skipped over those things. She didn't address those. In other words, she did really care what the truth was. It was like her job was to find them guilty no matter what. And her job should be making sure that you have the right people, and if not, find the right people. And I think they found the guy that actually did it, they found him after he had assaulted and done the same thing to somebody else. So some other woman went through the same thing because they were so focused on just grabbing whoever they could that they thought didn't matter.
Right, because at that point, you still have somebody on the street who's kind of scary, who you don't want to have out there.
That's right.
So I found a couple more different other Netflix documentaries I wanted to talk about, too. This one was kind of interesting, Dirty Money. And this was a documentary or investigative series on Netflix where they were sued, and there was interviews with an elderly former resident of Massachusetts who alleges that local attorneys he hired used their conservatorship system in Massachusetts to sell some of his properties and take the profits from it. So when I talk about conservatorship, I'm talking about somebody who does not have the mental capacity to be able to take care of themselves. So therefore, they are requiring that an attorney step in and kind of make decisions for them, almost kind of like a guardian ad litem or a power of attorney or something where they actually can't make decisions for themselves. And the interesting thing about this one was, and I have not watched this one, is that the way it is portrayed in the actual documentary or episode is that this attorney took money from this guy. He had him declared incompetent, sold his properties, screwed him over, took his money, whatever. But when you look at the complaint that this guy filed, this attorney, it's kind of interesting. So Netflix presents this narrative where you have this 74-year-old man who provides detail on how he came to hire this attorney and how he used money from the sale to have him declared mentally unfit and moved to an assisted living facility. So it's almost like this attorney he hired had him committed to a retirement home and took all of his assets. But
that wouldn't be the first time that happened.
Well, it wouldn't, but when you look at the way it actually went down, or according to this complaint, which makes for kind of an interesting dichotomy on the other side of the story, is that he sought legal assistance, and all of his properties were about to go in receivership because they were owing all these back taxes, and that the attorney saw that where this gentleman was living was unfit for human habitation, and endangered or materially impaired the health, safety, and well-being of the occupants, the neighbors, or the public. And so that this guy was living in basically squalor in a horrible situation.
Oh, a real Grey Gardens type situation, huh?
Grey Gardens.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
You never saw that?
No.
That was a documentary and a movie. And it was about like a cousin of the Kennedys and how they lived in this, what once was a grand house and had fallen into disrepair. And there was like plants growing in the middle of it, up through their trees growing through it, and animals wandering around. Drew Barrymore was in the movie. Drew Barrymore and Meryl Streep or Jessica Lange or somebody like that.
I don't know what these rich people are talking about. It's just like regular upkeep of your house.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm living in squalor too. My roofs are falling in. I got to fix that. I got a toilet's backing up. That's owning a home. I don't know what they're talking about.
But they thought they were still rich, and they were living in a house that basically was falling down around them.
Yeah, well, some of them feel like mine is too. So anyway, so this attorney seems to think like he has some reason as to why he did that. So he sold the property, he paid all the back real estate taxes this guy owed, and then he took the money that from the sale of all the properties and moved him into a nursing home where he could live and use that money to pay for it. So that was his kind of take on how what he did for it. But Netflix did this docudrama or this episode about it and kind of portrayed him as this evil attorney who's out there trying to steal money from his clients. Actually, whenever the police did a wellness check on this gentleman, they found him in squalid conditions and suffering from frostbite in his house. So I think it's kind of understood this guy was not living in the best conditions. He was elderly, and somebody was trying to watch out for him. But again, it turned out being kind of portrayed in a bad light for that attorney. So
it makes you wonder, say,
why would you even want to do that? Now, I'm not taking a side on, you know, what he did was right or wrong because I haven't seen it. But I think there are two sides to every story. And I think a lot of times when these different producers put these stories out, that they have a legit agenda to try to portray somebody as a villain and somebody as a hero or something.
Sure, they want to tell the story that they think most people will be interested in and will be, you know, will follow. So they tell it the way that way, and that may not be the most accurate way.
Yeah. Now, the one last lawsuit that came across for a documentary being sued was, again, another Netflix documentary. And this had to do with the Fire Festival. If you remember, that took place in 2007.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. It was a fake festival.
Yeah, pretty much. But this one had a lot to do. I mean, there was a lot of lawsuits that resulted from that. But the majority of these lawsuits had to do with people who were there and had their footage used in these documentaries.
And is it just because they didn't get paid for it?
Yeah, they weren't adequately compensated for it. And they felt that it was... that was not used appropriately. So, but so it seems like the documentary lawsuit realm is a burgeoning practice for an attorney. Might be a good place to go in this day and age. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that they got people to sign releases and things like that. And some people just sign them and they trust whatever you tell them. Other people, they maybe outsmart themselves. They think that they're getting something, they're getting noticed or they're getting some money. And then they see that it went towards something bigger and they say, oh, I could have had a bigger slice of the pie. And they regret that. They have buyer's remorse. And so then they want to come back and take a little more or say, well, I didn't understand. Well, you know what? Shouldn't have signed that document if you didn't understand. Should have gone to see a good lawyer like Mike Meadows and found out what you should and shouldn't sign. What are you getting and what are you giving up?
Here's a disclaimer. Court appointed makes no mention that Mike Meadows is a good lawyer or would be a good lawyer for hire.
Well, that's my opinion. I put it on a Yelp review.
Did you put it on a Yelp review?
Yeah. Mike Meadows, he's a fine attorney.
Oh, well, thanks, Tommy. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You don't have to say I'm good at my job. I'm just a fine attorney.
He's a fine attorney. Now, one angle that I looked at that I thought that he was asking about, too, is the concept where some of these documentaries, they like are filming people that are doing things like doing drugs. They're doing illegal drugs and they're purchasing illegal drugs or selling illegal drugs. Or in one case, they were purchasing and selling illegal weapons and things like that. And then people were asking, how can they have this documentary and film these things and they don't get in trouble for not having reported these people and stuff?
Right.
So the general concept is reporter's privilege, which is a protection against being compelled to testify about confidential information. And
just so you know, there are certain things out there called privileges in law, and that has to deal with things that cannot be put in front of the court. And there's things like the attorney-client privilege is probably the most famous, medical doctors, therapists, religious advisors, things like that, and also spouses. So those are the main ones. And so I think, you know, the journalist one is the one you're going to talk about there, but privileges are something that are recognized by courts that there are certain privileges out there that exist and we want them to exist.
Right. And while there's not any federal law that does that, it's just, like I say, a general concept of it. Now, there are some states, most states have enacted shield laws. And since these state laws vary considerably, it has been thought that the First Amendment protected reporters from having to reveal sources. Now, that's true up to a point. But there was a Supreme Court case, Brandsburg v. Hayes, in 1972. And Brandsburg was a reporter for the Louisville Courier Journal. and in the course of his reporting duties, he witnessed several people doing drugs and purchasing drugs and selling drugs and stuff like that. So they called him into court and said, we want to know who these people were and where this took place and stuff like that. And he wouldn't tell them. So it ended up going through several courts and ended up at the Supreme Court. And the ruling was actually against him 5-4. It was a split court, 5-4. But what they said was they didn't want to make the law of the land. They didn't want to make this a law of the land where it's like a blanket thing that you can do these things without any repercussions ever. They felt that it was better to say, well, in this particular case, yes, you're going to have to give us this information, but we feel like in the future, any of these type of things are going to have to be examined on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
So they ruled against him, but not entirely. Not like they shut it down. They just said it's going to be examined on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, and actually in a lot of states, they've enacted laws that journalists can claim a privilege based on the state law. So it's not a federal law, but there are some states that have it. 30 states actually have passed statutes, like you said, called shield laws, which allow journalists to refuse to disclose or testify about confidential or unpublished information, including the identity of sources. And I mean, this varies wildly, but it also kind of goes hand in hand with our whole concept of why we have whistleblowers, why we want to have people who can get this information out there and not fear having to come forward or being dragged across the coals to try to examine this or give cross-examination for this different information.
Yeah, because sometimes whistleblowers were involved in whatever it is they're blowing the whistle on. Their boss made them go do this, and they did it because they didn't want to get fired, but they knew that it was wrong.
Yeah, or alternatively, it's like, well, no, the boss says, no, I didn't want to do it. It was just you all by yourself. They don't want it flipped around on them.
Yeah. So. Well, then, and so you say, well, the people were there. Why wouldn't they have to? Well, according to criminal law under Title 18 of the United States Code, it says, whoever commits an offense against the United States or aids, abets, counsels, commands, induces, or procures its commission is punishable as a principal. Whoever willfully causes an act to be done, which if directly performed by him or another would be an offense against the United States, is punishable as a principal. So if you're a documentarian and you're just there filming what's happening and asking questions, you're not doing any of those things. You're not inducing them. You're not planning it. You're not giving aid and abetting. You're not supplying money for them to be able to do it. You're just simply documenting what's going on.
Right. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you say, oh, hey there, Mr. Noriega, or some famous cartel drug dealer.
Yeah.
Like, when you handed them that cocaine, the light was behind you. The shot wasn't great. Why don't you give it back to him? Let me scoot the camera over here and get a different shot. Now hand it to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At that point, you're kind of directing it a little bit. You're turning it into a scripted docudrama.
Right. But now some of the exceptions to that is, say that you're there and they're talking about, you know what, we're going to have to go over here and we're going to have to kill those people at that other spot because they're a rival gang. So we're going to load up and roll and go kill them. You can't stand by then because somebody is in danger, or just like if you overheard them talking about a terrorist act, like they were going to go blow up a government building. You can't just say, well, I'm just filming it.
Well, it's just like my attorney-client privilege. If I have a client that tells me something, if I know they're about to commit a crime, I can't keep that. That's not part of the privilege.
Right.
I have to actually report that because that's not something that is protected. That's not protected interaction.
And that's where the line is drawn as far as these shield laws and reporters' privilege is, as long as no one is in immediate danger or whatever. Now, I mean, you could say, well, look, when these guys go sell these drugs, there's a possibility somebody might have a gun and shoot them. Yeah. Or you see them arming themselves to go make a drug deal. They say, well, I got to have that just in case to protect myself. So if somebody tries to rob me. So you could say reasonably, well, this is dangerous. Somebody could get killed, but there is no direct threat and no one that you can say this person is going to get killed or kill somebody. So you're not obligated to do it. But if you know about it, you can't just say, well, I was just documenting it. You can't get me.
Well, plus it's just common sense. So you're not going to roll into a drug deal naked. You got to have a sidearm. I mean, it's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Well, and you know, even the priest, if you went to your priest and said, I want to confess that I'm going to kill somebody, the priest has to say that you did. They have to try to help you, you know?
Yeah.
And priests are a little bit more trustworthy, supposedly, than a lawyer. I don't know.
Okay.
You're just going to let that one lay, huh?
Yeah. Come tell me what you need to. I'm not going to make you say any Hail Marys. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions that we talked about. We got a whole holy host of different different legal terms out here today.
Holy host.
So
Batman?
The first term is anti-slap. What is a slap lawsuit?
That's that one that we talked about in the Donkey Kong one about not making people laws against personal privilege there or something.
It's the strategic lawsuit against public participation.
Yeah.
And the concern about these anti-slap statutes and procedures is that they may have a chilling effect on people's ability to bring lawsuits into the court. Because if you have a serious concern, you're going to get sued for just trying to have access to the court, you might not file the lawsuit. So it's definitely one of those things that is, as we go forward, it's going to have to be kind of a bit of a balancing act, because we don't want people putting out all these fake things and threatening people with lawsuits. And again, we don't want people not to have access to the courts. That's one of the hallmarks of our American way of life, is that we have the ability to have the government address any kind of issues that may have arisen and try to fix it. So now, this term I have used quite a bit. I don't know if I've ever actually asked you to define it. What is a cause of action?
A cause of action? Well, that's when you go to the court and you say, I want this to happen because of this reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. So the cause of action.
I'm using layman's terms.
That was a layman's term for sure. So the cause of action is the part of the complaint that's kind of the meat and the potatoes of it. And this lays out the different elements of what this person did and why that you're able to ask the court to fix this for you. So there might be 20 paragraphs in a complaint that talk about setting up what took place. There might be 7 or 8 paragraphs under a separate cause of action, or you might hear it called a count, where they lay out the different things that took place that actually caused the damage. So, for example, with defamation, the cause of action, the elements would be a false statement purporting to be fact; 2, publication or communication of that statement to a third person; 3, fault amounting to at least negligence; and 4, damages or some harm caused to that person who is the subject of the statement. So that would be actual cause of action against the person, not all the other facts that had to deal with the stuff setting it up, but those are the cause of action that shows that it's true. So, for example, in that first one we talked about, there was a defamation and also a false light. The false light cause of action has separate terms too, and the elements of that are a publication by the defendant about the plaintiff made with actual malice, which is the similar type we talked to in the New York Times and Sullivan, the defamation cases. Mm-hmm. We talked about that in a previous episode.
Right.
So, actual malice. And it places the plaintiff in a false light. And 4, it's highly offensive, embarrassing to a reasonable person. So that's the actual cause of action. So defamation, false light, those are the causes of action. The actual methods where you're allowed to recover from a defendant in those cases. So
I never would have come up with all of that answer.
Well, I went on a bit of a teaching montage there, I guess, maybe.
Like one of those 80s montages they had in the movies, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. So the thing I always is kind of important, I think a lot of lay people don't understand, when there's a complaint, you have different sections. There's usually one that lays out jurisdiction as to why the court can hear it. there's some facts that lay out a lot of different background about what took place. And then you get to the different causes of action, which say that because of all those facts that we previously presented, here's why they broke the law civilly. Here's why you should give us money. Or here's why you should make them take that documentary down. So those are the actual kind of causes of action that are very important in lawsuits, because you could file a complaint and it might have 50 pages of facts, but unless there's some sort of cause of action where the court is allowed to give you the relief that you need, it doesn't matter. So,
well, also along the lines of when we're talking about if a documentary, you're doing a documentary and illegal activities are taking place, another factor that needs to be considered too is you might not know exactly where they are when you're watching this. And, true. You know, you don't know what state they're in, maybe, or who has jurisdiction to even bring charges if there are charges to be brought. The film in itself is kind of like hearsay because you don't know how much of what they're depicting is real. It could be this whole drug deal thing they're filming is staged, and there's no actual drugs. You can't prove what's in that package. You haven't opened that package. So you don't know that there's drugs in there.
Well, that's true, but if you're the person who's portrayed in that documentary, if they're presenting you in this light, then I think it's safe to say that, you know, they're depicting you as that, and you could actually suffer damages because of that.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the documentarians themselves. What protects them from filming illegal activities and things like that and not being tied into that themselves?
Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean, and so, also, I mean, the there's different kind of jokes about, like, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. Truth is an absolute defense. Those are the different, you know, legal maxims you always hear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you always joke about those. But truth is pretty much a good defense to a defamation lawsuit. So if you're shooting video footage of what actually took place, you know, that's a pretty good defense for any kind of defamation lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Now, if you take creative editing and you take out every third word a person says and change it around so they're saying something completely different, then that's really not the truth that you filmed. That's something different that you're creating. So it's not actually a defense.
Right.
Anyway, but I think that the whole area of docudramas and documentaries and, you know, I love a good compelling story as much as the next person. But I think you actually have to be a little bit aware about how they're presenting these people in the different lights. Are they trying to tell a story? Or are there some facts under there that might be a little bit different?
So keep an open mind and evaluate the whole thing and then know that the prosecutor was guilty. She tried to do that to those poor boys and deserves to be a ghostwriter.
A ghostwriter? If you write a story about mysteries and ghosts, it makes you a ghostwriter.
Riders on the storm, into this world are born, into this world are thrown. Like a dog without a bone, an actor out on loan, riders on the storm.
I'll just let you play us out on the Doors.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is, doubting our nation. I have lived in the United States for 62 plus years, and the one thing I have never worried about is our nation being a secure republic. We have rules and laws that were designed and crafted by our forefathers for the purpose of maintaining order and providing a fair system of government by the people, for the people. It protects the rights of the weak against the unfair oppression of the strong. It is designed so that no one man can put himself above the will of a nation. And yet, here we sit in 2020 with exactly that happening. Not because we have no choice, but because those that sit in a position to see that our rules of law are followed are bowing to someone they all know is a mini dictator wannabe. They have no backbone and are showing that they are not honest, decent people, but puppets that will do anything that benefits them personally at your expense. Why Kentucky and Georgia keep reelecting Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham is beyond me. There is documented proof that they both just absolutely lie to suit their needs, not those that they represent. It reminds me of the pickup basketball days when one particular guy would argue every call his way. It was never, "We got the last one, so you get this one." Why was that? Because he was willing to fight you if you didn't let him have his way. To most of us, it was not worth it to actually come to blows over who gets the ball. McConnell and Graham are the same way, because their constituents don't care that they lie, cheat, and steal, and they never hold them responsible for their actions at the polls. We, the people, have the power to demand better from our elected officials, voting them out when they prove to be dishonest. But when we simply vote a party and not a person, then we get exactly the kind of government we deserve, non-functioning. How does it improve when we, the people, reward their bad behavior? The fact that we are still sitting back and letting Trump make a mockery of our Constitution and our way of life and the very ideals that America was built on is in itself a sad statement on we, the people. Either we don't care, or else the bastards have finally worn us down. Whatever they do, we just accept. Oh, well, that's the way it is. You know, that's just Trump. What are you going to do? To me, that is a prime example of why Trump has to go. This demonstrates that he has defeated the American people and the American way of life. As if 2020 hasn't been bad enough, he has now removed any hope or confidence we had in living in a productive, positive, and righteous nation. I always believed that what we do as a country is correct, and countries that oppose us are part of an evil empire. But now, I feel that we all woke up one day, and we have somehow become part of the evil empire. And I don't know the good guys from the bad guys anymore. I have always considered myself patriotic, but I find now that when I see a truck with an American flag in it, I hate seeing that flag and what it has come to represent. Trump stole the flag from half of America, and it can never be looked at the same again until his stain is removed from it. Christianity has been stolen by the Republican Party. I've always joked in discussions about being a Christian that I was not one because I'm Catholic. As a child, I remember being told at times by real Christians that Catholics were not Christians. I sure went to a lot of church and Sunday school and holy days of obligation for me not to be a Christian. If you are a Catholic, you probably understand what I'm saying. I always just considered that as being other faiths just don't understand Catholicism, or else they were scared of it. I mean, we do believe in exorcism. But this is different. Somehow, not being a Republican makes you a godless heathen. The only reasonable explanation for this is a 50-50 split in this country over Roe v. Wade and the support of the LGBTQ plus community and their fight for equal treatment. They weaponize the Bible of all instruments of destruction to use and wield as their righteous answer to the demon left. When even lately, the Pope of all religious beings says he thinks that LGBTQ plus rights should be protected and that people should not be persecuted for who they love. Oh yeah, but the Pope is Catholic, so he's not a real Christian. Come on, America. Can't we do better? Can't we do what is right in return to being a secure, orderly nation that sets the standards for the world? Wouldn't that be a great feeling to start with each day for a change? We can be better. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.